Okay, we're about to start now with our keynote speaker, and Zhang Kejun is well respected in China and the modeling and analyst circles. And I first met him a little over a year ago and was very impressed with the modeling work that he's doing at the Energy Research Institute. And I thought it would be really useful to engage him and get his thoughts on what the perspectives are for a low-carbon growth path for China, which is the core of the work that he's doing. So he is here sometimes in the States, but he's very difficult to pin down. So we're really very happy to have him here and have give us this presentation on some of his latest modeling results. Kejun has prepared a paper that we will be putting out as a joint product and putting it on the website. We're not quite there yet, but we will be releasing that sometime, hopefully within the next few weeks, which will be a much fuller amplification of the results. So, Kejun, would you like to start?
Okay. Thank you, David. I'm really sorry. So I should be the first speaker, but I was occupied by another meeting and also a little bit jet lag made me confused. I thought it's tomorrow for this meeting. So it's lucky it's not very far from here. So we have a modelers workshop by Energy Modeling Forum, Stanford University. So we will do something like 5 days meeting there. So I'm happy to be here, but not I will not very detailed talk about model, but I'm try to explain how to secure China's low carbon future by answer questions and also some keywords we are doing right now. And okay, this is a picture. What do we mean? We do the low carbon future. Even though in China we still have a lot of argument what's meaning about low carbon, whether we should have some target or not. But basically in our study we said, yes, we want to go to actually low carbon for some global target, for example, 2 degrees. Then come back to see whether China can do this or not. 2 degrees scenario, still very difficult for China. Even we push all the technology potential, just like in the panel before, we do very big potential for nuclear, for natural gas, for renewable energy. Actually, this really, the new target for renewable energy and nuclear is really amazing for next 10 years. But still, maybe we're still difficult to do some 2 degrees. So now our modeling team is still working on the possibility for China to do much more than we see so far. The enhanced low carbon, actually the green line, this we already announced, I think, 1.5 years ago and tried to push all the policy-making process to go to ahead with this one. So this is, in my presentation, I mainly focus on the green line for what we are meaning here for low carbon future for China, whether we can peak by 2030 and start to deep cut under, what's the condition for this. So basically, my presentation are the key component of this scenario study is we how to go to reach this enhanced low carbon scenario, and also talk about what's the cost, what's the benefit, and also co-benefit. Because now everybody know we have also suffered very serious local air pollution, local water pollution, how to combine them together. I think I really appreciate for the panel discussion. They already mentioned about a lot of aspects for what we are doing here in the modeling. And also, okay, in that case, if China want to go, we do find the very key component of the technology. So what can technology really need for China? Well, not only for China, I think this week we have for global modelers. We also have a lot, very intensive discussion for global technology. Who will take the lead? Who will benefit from the technology export or import? And finally, we even though our target, our low carbon future, we so far talk about 2050 or 2100 from the global modeling viewpoint. But our target, because Energy Research Institute belong to NDRC, who is the leading ministry to do the five-year plan. So actually, our target is the five-year plan. When we talk about 2050, the long-term target, we have to come back. What's the meaning for 12th five-year plan and 13th five-year plan? So that's our modeling tool right now is doing to support this. And okay, the first one is we try to change the economy, even though we have very huge forecast for GDP growth rate in China. But even though we have the global modelers quite doubt such kind of figure, but we pick up the data from domestic economists research and pick up something in middle. We didn't actually pick very high forecast for that. But basically, the Chinese economic structure will follow exactly what happened in the developed countries. That means the service sector or tertiary sector will take big share in the total GDP, but it will take a long time. Before 2020, it's impossible. I think industry is still very big share or the major share in the total GDP. This is some difficulty we want to go ahead. But we still want to see, just like in previous presentation mentioned about China's energy or CO2 emission increase much faster than what made forecast maybe 5 or 10 years ago. What happened for that? Just because of this. This is the structure in the Chinese industry. The middle part, the smaller part, is the energy intensive products. Actually, it's only take less than 10% of total GDP in China, but they consume more than 50% of total energy in China. So you can imagine, if this part of sector have some change, this will have very strong impact on China's future on energy. So we in our modeling, we say, yes, China have to limit or try to change some way for the domestic manufacturing industry. But when we do this project with other colleagues or with the government agency, they always ask us, okay, we have very big forecast for Chinese GDP. If you want to limit this, they said it's a fundamental industry. What's the driving force for very huge future GDP in total Chinese energy, Chinese GDP structure? So we try to do some modeling for that. For example, in the middle part, yes, so China can really limit some energy intensive products by supporting very high growth rate of GDP here in China. So this is possible. So we disclose all the data here for this table and ask a sector expert to check what happened for that, whether it's possible. So we make a forecast like this. This is the output forecast, for example, by 2020 and 2030, 2040, 2050. What's the picture for steel, cement, and other energy-intensive products? So we have a lot of discussion with industry people and try to disclose that here. What's interesting is this is a low carbon center. That's because ERI's study focus on how to push government to do more. If the government already decide to do something, it's not outside of our study. So our forecast is quite low. In our other scenario, we have higher forecast of steel and cement manufacture. Actually, cement manufacturers already go beyond than 1.6 billion ton last year. But whether China can need such kind of big amount of cement and steel, we make a study. That means we forecast not only for energy, we make forecast for steel and cement by look at what's their usage, which sector the steel go to, what's the linkage. That means something like a physical input-output table we do for 2020, 2030, try to answer the question. Actually, this is the major driving force why in the 11th five-year plan, China is very difficult to reach its energy target. Because if you look at the last 5 years, we have really amazing increase for production of energy-intensive product. That's the major driving force for last 5 years, China go overpass the United States to be the biggest CO2 emitter. And also, I think in this year, IEA also announced China also the biggest energy user. But the Chinese official data and the IEA official data have a different way to calculate the energy. IEA data include traditional biomass. So if you put that together, yes, we are bigger than the United States to be the number one of the energy user in the world. So this figure is very important, and try to understand what's the future for industry manufacture here in China. Whether we already nearly go to the peak of energy intensive products. If this is conclusion, then it's not difficult to understand that for 12th five-year plan of energy target and the CO2 emission target. This is something we did and also have a lot of discussion with the manufacturers. And, okay, the previous slide we mentioned about economic structure change. Then next slide I want to mention about we want to push energy efficiency progress in China. Yes, just like we mentioned about here in the panel discussions, keep it almost the same, very tough effort in the 11th five-year plan, in continue to do that in 12th five-year plan and 13th five-year plan. We cannot say, okay, we did very difficult to reach 20%, then maybe we give up because it's too difficult for China. So even though now we still have very big argument on how to set up the 12th five-year plan, any target, but we do hope all the policy we announced will continue and also include more policy to do the energy efficiency target. So finally, the target here for energy efficiency we set up is by 2030 or before 2030, China's energy efficiency in major industry will be in the top of the world. Then the question is they ask whether it's possible or not. Then we have to check carefully what's the existing manufacturer capacity, whether we will replace that or not with the most advanced technology now in China. Some good news, some bad news, but I think good news is bigger than the bad news. So this is for energy efficiency things. And another good news is, this is still in Chinese, but you can see this is in a building, not only for household, but also for a commercial building like this one. And this is a picture I want to explain how to reach 80% CO2 emission reduction in buildings and what kind of technology we should use for that. The good news is more than half of the technology in this picture, we already have that. And some of the technology, they go much faster than our modelers think about. For example, LED TV. In our model, we make forecast by year 2015. LED TV will occupy 30% of total market in China. But this already happened in the first quarter of this year. In Chinese market, LED TV is already higher than 30% of in the sale in the market right now. And in another way, is for example, China also, maybe we are still pushing that China will remove all the manufacturer of old lighting system. Every manufacturer is go to an saving lighting system. In the same time, this picture shows, originally Japanese industry have very advanced refrigerator system. But nowadays, the best refrigerator, highest efficiency refrigerator is in China, much higher than the EU standard for standard one. So that means something like 0.3 kilowatt hour per day. So already start manufactured here in China. And this actually, not expensive. It's not big difference with the price. That's the reason why in China have actually the very high energy efficiency refrigerator nearly occupy all the market. We need not give any subsidy for that. So it's already something like 100%. We are going to high efficiency refrigerator here in China. So this is some good news of what happened there. If we decide to go to this direction, the manufacturer can provide very new technology to reach this technology demand for low carbon, and also same for transport. And many of you maybe heard about that in China. Now they have a very big plan on the renewable energy use in transport, and also for, which is new energy. Actually, it's not new energy. It's an electric car or hybrid car, hybrid vehicle development plan. The government already prepared a very big budget to give subsidy on the electric car and hybrid vehicle in China. In that case, even though in our forecast we give very big car fleet by 2030, the total vehicle number can something like higher than 400 million vehicles. But it doesn't matter. We don't have a very big worry about oil supply because for 100 million of cars, if we reach our Chinese fuel efficiency standard, that means by 2020 or 2030, there will be 50% higher efficiency than nowadays. In the meantime, we also have electric car and also have for biodiesel ethanol mixed with gasoline. That means 100 million cars only consume less than 50 million ton of oil. So this, I think, we made a presentation on China for the oil industry colleagues. They really disappointed on this. So because of the total oil demand is not such big as they forecast. So we try to disclose our data, what kind of technology actually happened for this. And in the meantime, we also educate people to use less car. You can have car, just like the data showed here. You can drive the car maybe similar with a Japanese colleague. In there is 9,000 kilometer per car per year. But when in the United States, it's three times more than that. So this is the one way we try to push less oil consumption by use of advanced technology. So this is transport. And you have unused technology, but we also really care about the supply side. So we also have something like technology roadmap. We give a list of key technologies, something like we say it's the 28th key technologies here in China in the low carbon scenario. We identify that. This is very similar with IEA, the technology perspective up to 2050. We also did a very similar thing. And when we identify these key technologies, next work we are doing is we also worked with the National Technology and Science Planning. This means for 12th five-year plan, the technology R&D, and also 2020 planning on that. So we're trying to push the low-carbon technology we identified in the model inside their planning. That means how much money they need to do the support, and how much researchers, what kind of regime to support the fundamental research to do such kind of technology. So this is some ideas to link with the modeling work with the low-carbon future. This is, if China or other countries like U.S., EU, Japan can take the lead on low-carbon technology, we can make sure the technology cost or technology learning effects can go beyond much faster than what APEC before. Actually, also in the panel list, we hear about the renewable energy here in China. It's really amazing. They make the cost for solar PV and also for wind is decreased very quickly. I think by this first quarter for this year, the wind manufacturer Audi, what I heard is really amazing data. It's Audi lower than 5,000 Chinese yuan per kilowatt for a wind farm. This is a fixed cost. It's something already 60% lower than beginning of last year. So this is what happened there, the make the cost. The same story for PV. I think 2 months ago, we have the last bidding on the very big PV project here in China. The lowest price is they bid for something like 0.9 yuan per kilowatt hour from power generation from PV system. And some colleague, I've been to the manufacturer there. I believe the cost there is true. And it's now that just occupied market and provide a very low cost. Then another story is about CCS. Even though we have a very big argument in China for CCS, but we try to disclose all the data. Of course, in our power generation sector, we push everything for nuclear, for renewable energy, and for natural gas-based power generation. But we still have a big space left for coal-fired power plant. Even though nowadays Chinese policy is a regulation, make sure that all the newly installed power capacity is supercritical or ultra-supercritical. The highest efficiency power plants in China now. So we try to apply with that. But our strategy is we still want to push CCS. That means China has to very quickly go to IGCC-based power generation supply because that one can equip with CCS with less energy penalty and also efficiency loss. So when you think about that, this is a picture for future power supply system. Of course, when we think about coal-fired power plant, even by 2050, we still have a large amount of coal used. So CCS is we must use that. And this is actually, we really hope that from now, China can start our CCS project. And maybe by 2020, we have something like at least 10 CCS projects. We try different technology. And after that, we can fix which CCS technology in China we will use. And by 2030, make sure we will use CCS in large scale. After 2030, it's a very big spread out for CCS technology here. So this is the idea we design in the scenario, how to make sure China can peak by 2030 and start to deep cut after that. After 2030 peaking, the major contribution for the deep cut is come from CCS. And this is the data we just disclosed recently and tried to give us some in detail analysis, because our team, we joined two CCS projects. One is with the Huaneng Group. They will contract the first CCS project here in China. We already, the first IGCC in Tianjin, is going very well. And efficiency design there is the highest efficiency for IGCC in the world. But let's see what happens for that now, because now they're still in the halfway. Next June, they will be ready for power generation. So we'll check what happened for that. But the good thing is we already had the cost and other things, the data for that. So we use it in our modeling analysis. So this is some picture for CCS. And also the cost. Cost is many people think about CCS cost is very high. But our study says it's okay, we can pay for CCS. In the case if we want to have a lower CO2 emission, because even by 2030 in China, we are using something like more than 100 power plants equipped with CCS. But the overall price for the electricity is only something like a 3 cents Chinese yuan per increase of that. So it's very small, because by 2020 or 2030, the household income is already 8 times than nowadays. Even though they pay the same, or the electricity price could be doubled, it's still much less for the share of the expenditure for electricity in nowadays for in their pocket. So much smaller than that. So that means that I think the policy we want to support is that we can pay for the green development here in China, even though there's something is more expensive. And we also have to think about the cost. I think in another meeting in this week, we will take a 5 days meeting there, the global modelers, we have a very big argument what's the meaning of the cost. In IPCC and also Stern report, they report a lot of economic GDP loss. But actually, just like a McKinsey cost curve is always talk about technology-based cost, always very cheap. But some CG-type model reported the cost very high, but both sides, I think, they have some limitation, because the technology model gave the cost, only calculated the fixed cost and the operation cost. And the GDP loss by CG type model, normally you don't have much idea for the technology progress when they introduce a policy on climate change. This is some way. But basically, it's the cost analysis for China, we can pay for that. We have an international collaboration to help China to have a new technology and also some financial support. We can do the low carbon future by using the investment for this one. And we also have to think about what's the profit. But actually, in the panel discussion, talk about a lot about Chinese technology. Even recently, we heard about the U.S. Regulation. One really worry about Chinese renewable energy competition. And this actually, from domestic Chinese discussion, this is the profit for Chinese economy. If we make the technology succeed, what's the meaning of the future Chinese competitiveness? This is the picture I took actually in year 2008 in the Beijing automobile exhibition. This is a Chinese-made hybrid car, electric car. All of these five models are already sold in China. It's already in the road. You can check with the efficiency of that. And that's the reason why recently Chinese government decided to give very huge subsidy for electric car. That means for one car, they gave something like 60,000 Chinese yuan per car. And some local government like Shenzhen, they double the subsidy. So this double subsidy means it's much more money than people to buy a normal car. So it's a very big money to give a subsidy. But this is just some Chinese manufacturers recognize the importance for their future for the manufacturing in the global market. And this is another good example. Actually, this already happened. The Chinese made a clean coal technology, for example, supercritical and ultra-supercritical units. The fixed cost is only half of that in the United States and in the EU. That's the reason why in the Asian market and even in Europe, some Chinese manufacturers export a lot of technology to there. This is the driving force for such kind of things. For last more than 10 years, Chinese government really pushed the manufacturer to do high-efficiency technology. Now they really enjoy this. This is the low-carbon future here in China. We try to tell the story. If China can take very tough policy domestically, That's where I lead the manufacturer to be also the leading in the world. I cannot imagine if one country doesn't have very good policy on climate change, a policy on renewable energy, they can't have very good technology there. U.S. is one good country because the U.S. also have a clear idea for renewable energy and think about the investment for R&D. We still think about in near maybe 1 or 2 decades, major technology will mainly come from United States because by last year, the total R&D investment in China is something like 480 billion Chinese yuan, which is one-fifth of that in the United States. Or this money only accounts just similar with the size of U.S. investment on energy technology. So you can imagine for this one is how to compete with the U.S. industry for such kind of new technology R&D. But the good news is just Dr. Tan mentioned about this in China. We do hope maybe by 2020, China's total R&D can catch up with the United States because every year, based on the government planning, we have something like 20% growth rate for technology R&D. So it's a really high growth rate for that. Then let's see what happens for this. This is one way we think about. And we also recently strongly push not only for carbon issues, for energy issues, because now they will have very serious debate domestically for local environment target. So far, the Ministry of Environment Protection set up a target for 2030. That means by 2030, we will have some air quality, water quality similar with that in the United States and Europe. But our answer is no, we cannot wait that long time. Let's see what happens if China gave a lot of money for local air pollution control, what happened for 2020. So our study is to try to make some quantitative analysis whether we can have very good quality of air and water by 2020. Let's move their target ahead. This is a scenario. So based on the low carbon scenario, that's also green. Even the low carbon scenario, we do more. For example, we also use sulfur control technology and also black carbon. This is a very close relationship with the indoor air pollution and also climate change issues. And also NOx, and also PM2.5. This is very crucial. I think even though nowadays the air quality in Beijing is getting much better, but the problem is they use a different indicator to monitor. So they don't monitor PM2.5. They monitor the PM, so the quality is okay. But if you use this one, the air quality in Beijing, I have to say, is still very terrible. It's only something like 60% of days can reach the WHO standard. But if you're monitoring only PM, it's already something like 80% of days reaching the standard. So this is, we want to push. Actually, this has a very close relationship with the low carbon future because PM2.5, many of that come from coal-fired power plant. But if a traditional coal-fired power plant, like a supercritical, ultra-supercritical, even though they use quite advanced dust capture technology, still cannot solve the problem to PM2.5, but IGCC can. So this is something discussion, not only think about the carbon issues, but also think about local air pollution issues. We combine technology together. And the mercury, this is recently, I think many people know about the negotiation process on climate change, but this year they just start the negotiation on mercury emission. It's also the first meeting in Europe. They will go to very similar. I think this is the most recent some technology. We also think about the relationship with energy security issues. Of course, if you do low carbon, what's the meaning of energy security? This is a study we did together with WI. This report will be published very soon. And think about when you do the climate change issues, and also should be very big benefit for the energy security issues. But what we are meaning is energy security is much more bright. It's not only for import and other things, and also for local security of energy, for example, accident in the very big power plant, and also some accident in the gas pipeline. What's happened, just like this time, the BP issue, we also include in our energy security issues, what happened for that. And nowadays, before that, some colleague mentioned about water demand. This is also our study we work together with WI. Yes, we try to identify the relationship between the new technology and the water demand. just like nuclear, third generation nuclear reactor, what kind of water they need. And if we also use some other technologies, how to link Chinese water supply issues, because now they actually water supply is more crucial than climate change here in China. Many cities really suffer with the water supply there, especially in the inland provinces. And finally, several slides. I just want to mention about what happened in the policy. Okay, we have every technology there. We have to understand the cost. Then finally, we have to go to the near-term policy. This is the policy roadmap in the modeling we are doing right now. Even though we set up a target for 2050, this is a very high-efficiency air conditioner. Okay, we say the COP can equal 8. With 100% penetration rate by 2050. In order to make this happen, what we must do in 12th five-year plan and 13th five-year plan. This is the idea we set the target by 2050 and come back with a policy demand in 12th five-year plan. This is, for example, how to increase the standard of energy efficiency. But we have to work together with technical people. Even though I want to increase something like COP equal 5, but they said, no, it's impossible. Then the policy is impossible. So we made this study. When we presented this to government official, everything is already understudied. So we try to answer the question. Then this table, we already published the paper, gave some big picture that what happened in the policy making process in the 11th five-year plan. Many of the colleagues here, you know that between 2006, middle of 2006 and 2008, every week China contracted two coal-fired power plants. It's very big, amazing. But another way is in the same period, every week Chinese government announced a national policy on energy. So this is a very high-intensive way. So far, I think China already learned nearly all of the policy in the world. What happened in the United States? What happened in Europe? Actually, all the China pick up, except some policy like a carbon tax, well, not yet. Emission trading, not yet. Maybe some also other thing, some renewable energy policy, not yet. But not a very big space for new policy. That's the reason why recently our team is still pushing carbon tax and emission trading. So let's see what happened in the 12th five-year plan, whether we can go ahead with that one. Anyway, in the 11th five-year plan, the government is very, very tough. They use a command control way to do the energy efficiency. Recently, they said they also complained they're very tired of this. So you want to use some new policy. New policy, good thing is please use the market to control the price of energy and try to use some difference. And this is the pictures. I think we do hope all the policy will be continued in 12th five-year plan together with some new policy, like environment tax, including carbon tax. We can go ahead with some new policies. And finally, the last slide I just want to mention about how to go to a low-carbon future. And this is just linked with the Chinese strategy for the low-carbon city, low-carbon province, or national low-carbon target. Yes, we should have short-term policy. We check very carefully what's the gap between the low-carbon policy and existing energy and renewable energy policy. What's the difference of that? Whether China is on the right track to go to the 2050 target for a really deep cut of CO2 emission. And also long-term one, let's maybe work together internally or internationally. What kind of policy we can work together with the United States and the EU, Japan. I think in near future, climate change policy will mainly depend on several leading countries, including China. And also, I believe China will be very active in the near future for climate change issues, and also will be changed over the next few years. Maybe our study focuses really go to Copenhagen Plus 5 and Copenhagen Plus 10. So far, Copenhagen negotiation no more in our eyes for the study. So what do we see? What happened for that? And now think about what's a political roadmap. Whether we should continue to push others to do more, leave this myself, okay, I cannot do, you should do something like that. But this time in Cancun, I believe the EU will go ahead with their 30% target without pushing others to do that. I think China also have a similar thing. The policy-making process, even though China promised 40 and 45% target in Copenhagen, but now seems all the policy is going to 45%. They almost ignore the 40% target. So they are going higher boundary of that. And now our thinking is whether we can see some other space we can push or do better effort to go beyond than that. Okay, I'll stop here. Sorry. thing. Maybe Bang got time.
Great. Well, thank you very much for the presentation. And if it's okay, we will put these up on our website so that you can go back and read the detail. So, because I'm sure there was a lot of interest in the detail that was presented there. We'd like to go ahead and open it up for questions for a few minutes before the lunch comes. I was going to start with a question of, you described first the concept of the shift in the structure of the economy, and then the improvement of the efficiency in manufacturing, and then described low carbon technologies, production technologies, sort of component pieces of getting on this pathway. What's your sense of the relative importance of those three areas? Is it more important to do the structural shift, or is it more important to get on a very high pathway for, say, efficiency improvements in manufacturing or the low-carbon technologies? I suppose, I know the answers are all important, but maybe you can go a little deeper than.
Okay, we released our report. I think it's a very big report, nearly 1,000 pages, in Chinese. We give the importance of the policy, for example, what's the role of economic structure change, contribution to the CO2 emission reduction, and also energy efficiency improvement, together with the renewable energy and nuclear contribute for that. I think all these three aspects all is very important. I want to say like this way. Maybe I think several years ago we had for a lot of argument because the total investment is very limited. And many people said, okay, we see something like 10 billion Chinese yuan, and we have for demand maybe 100 billion demand. Then they have to judge how much money for this, how much money for that. But what happened nowadays, I think that Chinese policy-making process, we leave all the space for investment need for renewable energy, for nuclear, for energy efficiency, and also for the economic structure change. Economic structure change, basically, we don't have much investment for that. Just go ahead with that. So I think that even though now, just like I mentioned about before, that China is maybe the number one investment on wind, and also very soon we also maybe the number one for solar PV here in the world. But the investment for that is still very small part of the total investment in China. Because in China, we have very high saving rate compared with that in the United States. Now the saving rate in China is 51%. That means that people put their money, they don't use the money, just put it into the bank. And the bank have to spend the money. So we got very big pressure for the investment system. That's the reason why Chinese policy want to go to encourage people to spend the money rather than put the money into the bank. The saving rate in the United States is less than, I think, 10% of that. So this is a very big difference. And so the discussion like this way, we just ask, okay, if you want to do more for renewable energy, do more for nuclear or more energy efficiency, the question is just like this, how much money you need, whether we can afford for that. But so far, it seems the answer is we have enough investment to support this.
So I'll open up the floor here. I think I can see almost anybody. So we'll start here.
Hi, Bima from World Watch Institute. First, thanks a lot for this very informative and inspiring presentation. I have a serious question. First, regarding your modeling methodology, my understanding is that all the projection modeling have to based on a series of important assumptions. And you just mentioned that you have projections for the future China GDP growth. I just want you to, could you explain a little more about your projected GDP growth rate, and how does that compare to other well-cited sources like EIA has this projections up to 2030. And my second question is about some of the change and the new progress in data. You mentioned that the China's cement production in 2009 already surpassed 1.6 billion tons. And I think in your table, you projected that number in to 2020. So how do you address those changes? And my third question is, what's your projection of the carbon intensity in your enhanced low carbon scenario by 2020, and how does that compare to the 40 to 45% goal? And the last question regarding the electrical vehicle subsidies. And my understanding is that all the subsidies go directly to the manufacturers instead of go to the consumer. So basically, the consumer doesn't have a direct incentive to buy the vehicles. So do you have any rough numbers of the actual sale of the electric vehicles in China before and after the subsidy policy? Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Have a very quick answer to the question. First, the GDP, as we compare all the study for Chinese GDP, including international one and domestic one, we can see the very big difference. Domestic forecast is very high compared with international. Actually, EIA and IEA use very low GDP growth rate for their forecast. But because we are doing domestic scenario, so we mainly pick up the forecast for GDP from China. So it's much higher than the EIA and IEA data. The second one is for cement. Yes, we do notice that kind of thing. That means China really accelerated the process for we say it's a highway industry or highway chemical period. That means in near future, China planned something like a 300 airport. We want to finish the 300 airport contract by 2030. But now the Chinese make that, they will finish everything by 2020. This is what happened here. It's 1.6 billion ton cement means 100,000 kilometers expressway construction, 10,000 kilometer railway construction, including 2,000 high-speed railway construction. If we keep this 1.6 billion ton cement for 20 years, everything in China construction is finished before 2025. So then you can think about the cement plant normally they have for 25 years lifespan. This gave us a very big dangerous is maybe by 2025, within 15 years, all the manufacturer of cement or steel have to come down very quickly. This is something very big damage for economy. So we have to carefully check whether China's economy really has some sudden growth and how sometimes have to come back again. The third one is about electric car. Yes, okay. Yes, in our baseline scenario, is our carbon intensity is something like 44%, similar with that one. Or in the low carbon scenario, is 53%. But we also calculated the national target for 40 and 45% because the assumption is totally different. National planning is different with the research, academic research on the scenario. So national planning, they have a national plan on GDP and also national plan on energy. So the carbon intensity for 40 and 45%, we mainly follow that one. It's also same. Our model also calculate that one. So this is different. This just reflect the uncertainty of the carbon intensity. And let's Copenhagen process go ahead with that one. And we'll see. I just mentioned about our purpose is to look at what the policy need there and to see whether we have some more space. The last one is electric car. So far, when we start the subsidy, you mentioned about, the subsidy going to manufacturer. I think it's similar effects to going consumer. For example, one consumer, you have to pay something like 200,000 Chinese yuan per electric car. You get subsidy for 60,000 for that one. You got money. It's the same. You pay directly, some like 140,000 yuan for that one. That gives it. And right now, this is a big problem. It's after Chinese government announced the subsidy policy, actually we do notice the manufacturer in China for electric car didn't follow up. It didn't provide enough good products to get this subsidy. So let's see. I think technology preparation still needs some time. I think let's see what happens for next year.
Well, I guess the other question I've mentioned to you alluded to hoping that the 12th five-year plan would include things to continue the progress. What are you hearing, though, about what is being included?
I think the policy, I mean, efficiency policy, because many colleagues working on efficiency, you know, I think they're very eager to continue with all the policy already announced in China. Actually, what I do see recently, some policies continue to go ahead more than that, because the policy right now in...
Sorry. I'm not sure whether I should repeat that. This is the last year in the next 5-year plan. It seems China got a very big problem with the target. I think by this first half year, the energy intensity decrease is very limited. So I think by now, especially from July to September, Chinese government continually is announcing new policy on that. I do think this policy could continue for next 5 years. And also, just like what I mentioned about, we do hope some new policy on tax, maybe not carbon tax or other, some similar with any tax can come through to support that. This is our study. So, basically, the Chinese delegation announced they don't want to do sector-based approach. But we do the study to see what happened for the sector-based approach here in China, whether it's good for China or not, because we try to do the research for the government and to see what the benefit for China. So right now, we are doing two sectors. One is the power generation sector in China. Another is the cement sector in Shandong province. Actually, the Shandong one is maybe outside the UFCCC can do something sector-based approach because California states want to do sector-based approach with Shandong province. They will sign a memorandum very soon. So we are doing the study, try to avoid some political thing. For example, not cap. We calculated the sector-based approach target based on CO2 emission per 10 cement. This is a quite good way because this is very good for energy saving policy in Shandong province. They already set up a target for energy use per 10 cement. We calculated based on that what's the CO2 emission. Maybe they can do more than that in the case if they have good job or something, financial flow to do that. This part can go to carbon trading market. This is, let's see what happens for that. We are still for Cancun, and what I heard this time, EU really have for this thing in the pocket to bring to Cancun with a very big budget for sector-based approach. And recently, China also got some trouble with the CDM. So we are thinking about we have to find some alternative way for trading for China. So this is our study right now.
What do you think of the most likely approach taken by Chinese government to reach the 40 or 45% target? For example, it's possibly will be regulatory measured or market approach. Regulatory measured, I mean, government just assign a target to the province and to the different sectors, or use the carbon tax or trade carbon trade. So what's the most likely approach?
I think just recently, actually, the 12th five-year plan should come through this month. I think internally, there are also some news announced by government. For example, I don't worry about China's 40 and 45% target. Let's go ahead with other targets. For example, Energy Bureau will announce the energy intensity target soon. I think last week, they talk about something in some meeting, now the really official way. What they said is correct. Something like in 12th five-year plan, they want to go to 17.3% of energy intensity, which I think is quite low. in 12th five-year plan, they want to go to 16.6% of energy intensity. If you calculate these two together with the target of non-fossil fuel, it's already go beyond that 45%. So I think we... we need not to talk about too much about the Copenhagen target, just leave the space for China to do our own policy on energy, renewable energy. This is already enough to go ahead with the target. So this is what I think. But we still keep the negotiation process, for example, technology transfer, financing support there, and to see whether we can do a better job on that.
Well, since I see lunch, most of you can't see that the lunch is actually ready to be served. So why don't we do that? We're going to take a short break for lunch. Actually, if our panelists for the second panel can probably find a way to get to the head of the line for their lunch, and then we'll start up the panel while everyone is finishing off. But join me in thanking Jiang Kai-jun for his participation.
I just want to introduce myself. Sarah Lattice, emailed.com.